This is Traveling to Bluegrass, brought to you by H&R AgriPower and Farm Credit Mid-America. Here's Alan Watts.
Welcome to Traveling to Bluegrass Uncut. Today we talk with Chandler Technical Agronomist Luke Watson about planning before you plant the crop this year.
Luke, what kind of fungicide planning and how important is it in the preseason, even though farmers won't be spraying until summertime? So go ahead and think about this now.
Well, you know, when it comes to fungicides, the best decisions are generally made before the crop is planted, along with other agricultural inputs, and not just when the lesions are showing. So in Kentucky, we deal with a lot of variable springs, like most of the Midwest. Because we're in the Mid-South, we also get the humid summers, disease environments that can flip pretty quickly. So planting ahead generally allows growers to align genetics, look at disease risk, run ROI numbers to kind of see which products you want to use in what fields, and then work out the application logistics and economics, before we get in season. So, I think the main thing to remember is fungicides are, risk management tools, not rescue tools. So in our environment, diseases like gray leaf spot, southern rust, tar spot, if it continues to move south, and even like frog eye leaf spot and soybeans, they're all weather driven. And we can't control the weather, but we can control how prepared we are for the upcoming season. I always like to remind growers that preseason planning allows you to set realistic yield goals, identify your high risk fields, whether it's continuous corn, high residue, river bottoms, tight rotations, something like that. Then again, align those hybrid disease ratings with fungicide strategy. So if you have hybrids that need more plant health benefits late, generally that's why we like to look at strobilurin and heavy fungicides. Or if you're really going out there for disease specifically, is where we target the DMIs, the triazoles, the SDHI type of stuff. So the key here, is probably discipline. If you decide to spray, we want to be because it fits your agronomic and economic plan. And generally that comes from being, prepared before the season starts.
Besides budgeting, Luke, how does preseason planning reduce the reliance on in-season fungicide applications?
Fungicides work best as part of an integrated disease management system. That starts with hybrid and variety selection with strong disease tolerance. Crop rotation, residue management, we've talked about, field history. So if a field has low disease history and strong genetic tolerance, fungicide becomes more conditional. Whereas if it's continuous corn with a history of gray leaf spot or tar spot, fungicide becomes more probable. So generally, we like to think about it as a pretty good rule that if you think about it ahead of time, you have this stuff planned out, it causes you to not have so many what we'd call knee-jerk reactions in season to make sure at the end of the line, at the end of the day, we're looking at our bottom line. And that's what growers are going to be super aware of this year is ROI on each application within their crops and taking advantage of preseason pricing or financing options is a great way to do that and keep down the number of applications or higher priced applications in season.
What resistance management strategy should farmers establish during the planting phase?
Resistance isn't really theoretical. It's a real thing. We've always seen reduced sensitivity to certain fungicide classes in multiple crops nationwide. A lot of the best practices we use across the U.S., across the globe, and in Kentucky as well, is rotating, that frat group. So whether it's your group threes, which would be your DMIs or your triazoles, your group sevens, which would be your SDHIs, or your QOIs or strobilurins, group 11s, making sure that we're using – if we're going to use one product that we rotate between years or even application timing or using multimotive actions. So there's a ton of pre-mixed products on the market. A lot of them are really, really good at what they do, just making sure we choose the right products. We want to make sure we avoid repeated solo strobilurin applications, so that group 11. There's a lot of products out there that are like that, and they're great to use to maybe mix your own multimotive action fungicide. We just want to make sure we're not using them solely by themselves because they do have so much resistance already to them. Also, we want to apply at labeled rates. So anytime you're underdosing, I know the jug goes further, but you're accelerating resistance. And then also avoid unnecessary multiple passes, if disease doesn't justify it. Generally, the plant health benefits we get out of fungicides, especially in that VT to R1 time frame, are enough to carry us through black layer unless there is a high disease presence.
And nobody would do that, would they? Right?
Yeah.
Right, I hear you. How should application coverage and logistics factor into the fungicide planning before spring?
So this is one of the things I'm probably most passionate on. What we talk to our seed pros here in the state of Kentucky about is not all fungicides are created equal. Each, you know, we tell people in corn and soybeans, right, each product goes on a certain acre to get the most out of it and get the most ROI for your dollar. Same way with fungicides. Some fungicides are contact, and some are more locally systemic products. So in contact herbicides, much like contact fungicides, coverage is going to drive performance. So when you think of strobilurins and some of the older triazoles, a lot of time that's where you're going to see where ground rigs are going to have better efficacy because they're getting so much penetration of the canopy and using a higher volume. On systemic products, so a lot of the newer products filling out with got newer triazoles, anything with SDHIs, a lot of time those are better suited. They're great in ground rigs. They're also better suited aerially because you're going to get more locally systemic. We still don't have any systemic products on the market that can translocate from one side of the plant to the other, but we know that some products are better used in concentration over coverage, and that's going to depend on the product you have and the logistic process of application that you're choosing to do. So just making sure that you choose the right product for the right application is going to maximize that ROI, you know, for growers out there. You know, on top of that, you know, knowing adjuvant selection should match. Staying away from NIS and making sure that, you know, there's a lot of growers out there starting to use other products, newer products, even more organic products, things like fulvic acid, other chelating agents, especially when they're using some kind of micronutrient package or something like that.
Certainly makes sense completely. But looking at cost, how can a farmer determine if adding a fungicide is worth the investment this year?
Well, you know, like we've kind of mentioned here, it's a super tough year for all of us out there. You know, I farm myself as well. And a lot of time we're going to be putting everything pen to paper this year, making sure ROI is what's most important and at the forefront. So first off, there's nothing a farmer can apply to a field or a grower and increase yield. So the first thing we have to do is curb those expectations. What we're doing is protecting yield that's already there, protecting that yield potential. So when you look at fungicides specifically, what is my disease probability? What yield response is realistic? And how many bushels do I need to break even? So for example, if corn was $5 and application cost is $30 an acre between the product of the application, the surfactant, you know, whatever guys were using, you need to roughly 6 bushels to break even. And so when you look at that, if your disease risk is low and response probability is lower, probably 20 to 30% because you've got a low disease risk and you don't have a host that's susceptible. So say you're using a product in the channel lineup with a high natural resistance to southern rust, like we do in a couple of ours, the probability is probably in that 20 to 30% and the mass probably not going to support that application. If disease risk is high and response probability is high, so you've got the disease triangle, you've got all three of them there. That's where it's 60, 70%. It likely does. The goal isn't to spray more. I don't think anyone wants to do that. The goal is to maximize our margin on every acre. And that's kind of what we're wanting to do.
I think it makes total sense, right? So Luke, for sure. Luke, we appreciate you walking us through how planning ahead with fungicides can help growers make confident decisions when it matters the most. And certainly great talk with you as well. Good luck for a good planting season in 2026, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully we have more of a quote-unquote normal spring this year, get rain on the back half, and look forward to seeing everybody out this year.
Yeah, I know you mentioned earlier about the weather. Last year, this was such a crazy year. I was talking to a farmer, and we're done recording now. I was just talking to a farmer, Joe Nichols from Seven Springs, and he said, surely to goodness you can't have another year like last year where you have floods and then a record drought the same year. He said, that's just unusual. I said, yeah, you got that right.
Crazy. Yeah, well, I do a lot of presentations, you know, come August with field days and stuff every
right.
year. And in 2024, I presented on, it was the wettest April.
Oh, yeah.
And, no, it was the wettest May in 132 years in the state of Kentucky. And last year was the wettest April in 132 years. So we're right now, we're 2 for 2. I'd love to go 2 for 3. I'd love to miss a year.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it's crazy. And just extreme, we've been the weather of extremes here the last few years. That's not good for agriculture and for farmers for sure, you know. So
Well, on top of that, and then, the markets that we're having to sell into.
Exactly right, yeah. A farmer told me one time, he said, "No, we're getting paid the same price we were 20 years ago." Really, they're right. I mean, not a lot different than price. That's a shame because, fuel costs more, everything costs more except for the price they're paying you for the grain, which is unfortunate. So,
Yeah,
man.
what's the old saying? The farmers are the only ones that have to pay retail, sell wholesale, and pay the
Yeah.
freight both ways.
And that's the truth. And, to raise the crops as they do today, you can't not do it without all the tools that you have in the toolbox. Why in the world would you use things like you guys have and things like that in the toolbox? If you got it there, I mean, you can't produce the bushels and acres that you, I mean, grow it on the acres you're growing it on unless you have those tools in the toolbox. So,
Yeah, it's when you look at just yields
oh, yeah.
over the last 15, 20 years, where 150 bushel used to be a big deal, now when you make under 220, you're disappointed. And
Yeah, right,
so
exactly right.
a lot of that has to do with germplasm, because
Yep.
seed is the only thing that has changed genetic wise in the last 20 years. You're still using the same fungicides, or not the same fungicides specifically, but the same modes of action, a lot of the same
Right.
chemistries, the exact same fertilizer, that even our grandparents did.
Right, which is amazing. It's amazing what the technology has done over the years, especially in the row crop industry. It's fantastic. I mean,
Yeah,
there's
between
livestock's catching up with it somewhat, but the row crop is really just leap years ahead of where we were 20 years ago, even 5 years ago, really. So,
But between the genetics and the equipment, and the level of
oh, yeah.
efficiency that we can all run at nowadays,
Oh, yeah.
it's hard to keep up, but also super exciting to see where we're gonna be, one day whenever my son's looking out at how much it's changed.
Our guest today, Channel Technical Agronomist Luke Watson. I'm Alan Watts, traveling the Bluegrass.